So welcome everyone to another episode of Europe's B2B Tech Sales Podcast. My name is Patrick and I'm very happy to welcome James Buckley here with me. He's the Director of Business Development at JB Sales Training. Great to have you here, James.
Thank you very much for having me. This is awesome. I love podcasts and this is going to be a lot of fun.
I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So let's dive right in, James, with your two tactical tips that you brought today.
Yeah, so my first tactical takeaway is keep talking to people after you schedule the demo. Most sales development reps specifically tend to work for a long time to earn the credibility and get a demo scheduled, and then they get it scheduled and they never talk to that person again. That is the worst habit, because what it says to the prospect is, I only wanted that demo and I don't really care. So that's my first tactical takeaway. I will also say, you don't have to keep sending emails or following up about the deal. You can leave thoughtful commentary, like posts, reach out to them in DMs, send them funny GIFs or GIFs, however you pronounce it. There's a lot of ways to not vanish right after you schedule a demo. So that's my first tactical takeaway. Any thoughts on that, or should I go right into number two?
No, that's great. I would have asked now, how do you do it? What's your favorite thing after that? Because I think a lot of salespeople do struggle, especially in the demo, you know, right after, to get the next meeting scheduled. May it be to say, you know, most of the prospects after a demo, they say, yeah, we have to talk internally and get back to you. Is that okay with you? And obviously it's not. And, you know, I found a very easy solution to that, saying, yes, that's all totally fine. Let's do, you know, I am chasing you afterwards. You know that already. And for me not to be needing to do that, and for you not to be annoyed about that, let's schedule in 2 weeks for a half an hour. You give me feedback no matter what, you know, even if you don't want to, you just give me feedback. And in Europe, that works quite well. So how would you deal with that?
Yeah, so ghosting, which is what you're talking about here, when people have a great conversation with you and then vanish, actually leads really well into my second tactical tip. When you're on your first phone call with somebody, say to them at the end of the call, it sounds like we have some great traction. I'm really excited to move forward with you to the next step. I just have one ask. Let's not ghost each other, okay? No one ever says, no, I'm definitely going to ghost you. They all agree, okay, yeah, totally, I'm not going to ghost you, right? It's a very human thing. If you say this, then when they ghost you, you have every right to send this email. You send an email and in the subject line, you only put the ghost emoji. That's it. And then at the end, in the body of the email, it says, are you ghosting me? ? And that's the email.
If what you do the best this thing ever. Too,
the reply rates for this are bananas.
I'm sure it is. Such a smart way. Once again, I mean, I always, you know, I see my light bulb shining right now. It's like, why haven't I thought about that? To just say it, use the objection. Basically, that's the trick, right? Use the objection for your advantage.
Well, you beat them to it. You take the power away from it. And that's really important. Plus, everyone lets their guard down. We can be really human now. It's okay. No surprises. Morgan J. Ingram came up with this, and it's probably one of the better tips that I've started using recently that get people back to the table. Most of the time when they respond, the response starts off with laugh out loud, which you know is like, okay, I hit a good high note here.
Definitely. So what's in your case, James, what is the usual? So you started to do that right after the demo now. Let's not ghost each other.
I think it's important. So first of all, we don't demo. Let me be really clear. No one likes a great demo, right? Everybody that comes away saying, what a great demo. No, it wasn't, right? No one likes the demo. The demos always suck. And let me tell you why. In most instances, we get people on a call and we want to immediately share our screen and then tell people what's going to happen. Sandler Sales Training will refer to this as an upfront contract. Great technique. But when we say, I'm going to share my screen, can you see my screen? Great. Can you hear me okay? Great. Because this happens to decision makers so often, and the flow is the same for everybody everywhere, they disengage in that moment. And then you can usually tell that they're disengaged when you're doing the demo, because you're going through the demo, and if they're on screen, this is what you see. Right? And for those of you that are listening and you can't see me, I'm looking at my other screen and I'm typing, right? And this is what people doing demos see when they're doing the demo. At the end of the demo, you might get an answer like this, and we talk about this all the time at JB Sales. You might hear, okay, well, this has been great. I need some time to digest this, and then I'll get back to you. You can guarantee that person is probably going to ghost you. I'm saying like 75% chance you'll never hear from that person again. And the reason they need to digest it is because you showed up and throwed up, man. You shared some screen, went through some features. You never once talked to them about what their needs were. We have to take a step back from the standard demos, and we have to start saying shit like, I could show you 1,000 things, but why don't you tell me what you want to get out of this call, and we can start by focusing there. Then shut your mouth and let them tell you what matters to them, because they don't care about 80% of what you're about to show them. They only care about the 20%. And if you don't ever talk about it, or if you only talk about it for 5 minutes, you've already lost that deal, and it never even got started.
So true. So true. Yeah, no, no. I mean, there's a lot of you guys. You help everybody to not do it like that. And why do you think it's always like that, though? It's so often, or do we just talk that it's like that, but it's actually not happening anymore? And everybody is kind of having great conversations by sharing and talking like equally. And
my finally... belief is that this standard demo practice exists for two reasons. The first reason is that we're very comfortable. Salespeople are creatures of habit. And if we get into a flow and we rehearse it enough times and we perform it enough times, in the case of account executives, account managers, CS, people that close, usually it's the same conversation every hour on the hour. Unless you're doing half-hour demos, and then it's the same conversation every half hour. By the end of day one in that job, you can spit that shit out like it's no big deal. And then what we do is we get complacent and we start going through the motions. Mm-hmm. We stop actively listening to what our prospects want, and we start repeating the things that we're very comfortable saying with the right tones and the right body language. This is all great practice. Like, there's nothing wrong with this, except for the fact that you're just doing it to do it. Instead of being like, does this really matter to the person I'm selling to? Usually, 80% of the time, it doesn't, because people usually buy things for 20% of their functionality. So, like, the second reason it exists is the generational gap between leadership and front lines. In anybody that's over the age of 40, maybe even 45, if you go the heavier route, right? Go back even further, just a couple more years. Volume was the name of the game. More doors knocked, more phone calls made, more emails sent, more, big M-O-R-E, was the name of the game in those sellers' heyday when they were good at it. Today, young sellers will tell you that they sit on the top of the performance board because they do less better. But from top down, we're getting this pressure to get results. So we want to hop on the call and we want to get through the small talk really fast. And then I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to run through 8 pieces of features that might be useful for you. Okay, did you have any questions? No? Great. See you next time. When's the next step? Do you have your calendar in front of you? We're rushing our prospects through this process because we're being pressured from the top down to do more. Take a step back and a deep breath and ask yourself, am I really serving my customer in this moment? Or am I serving my pocket, myself, my company? Because if you're not serving the customer, most likely they're going to churn at the end of the year anyway. Because what you've done is you've convinced them, you've persuaded them to buy something from you instead of selling them what they need.
Yeah. How does you just mentioned with the demo, right? It's not, you shouldn't just go in and demo. What's that ideal sales process look like from your point of view?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, I feel like the questions that we ask matter. I feel like documentation of what matters to them has to take place. Then, so let's say, and I'll just put a hypothetical in front of you. Let's say you have your first call with your first decision maker. We all know there's anywhere from 6 to 8 decision makers at every company, depending on the size of the organization. Some larger enterprises have hundreds of decision makers. Very difficult to close those deals. Lots of stakeholders in the conversation. But let's say you're on the first call with your first prospect, one of those decision makers. The best thing you can do is, one, ask them, top 3 things that equal success for you. What are they? Write those down. Right? Then, once you're to a point where you can show them something, because we do live in a show me economy, I'm not saying we should stop doing screen shares. I'm saying what you show people shouldn't be a half hour presentation, because nobody likes that. Right? So you go and you show them for 5 minutes the first thing that they care about. And then you take that screen share down and you ask them, what are your thoughts on that? Right? I want to talk about this further. I want you to tell me what you feel, how you feel about that solution that I just showed you. And you allow them to go off. Okay, so here's our problem. This is what we're doing. It may work, it may not. What about this? What about that? You get a lot of discovery in that moment, right? Maybe it takes a half hour. Maybe it takes the whole hour. You don't know. You still have 2 other things to cover. It's great to have things left over that you didn't get to talk about. Want to know why? Because you can say, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, so pull up your calendar and let's make sure we put some time on so that we can cover that on the next call. And what you've done is you've set this person up for multiple calls to focus on the things that matter most to them. Instead of, I'm going to share my screen and feature dump on you for 30 minutes and show you 10 things, even though you really only care about 2. But it's how we lead the conversation. It's how we guide the conversation. And I'll give you another tactical tip here. Tell people how you sell stuff and ask them what their process is for buying stuff. How do you buy stuff like this is a very powerful question, because then your expectations are set as the seller. And here's another tip. If they can't tell you that answer, they're probably not your decision maker.
And not a champion either, because they have never done it before. So
champion is a very sensitive word in our world. Our training will show you that champion has a very specific meaning to it. Somebody that has access to budget and someone that will be my voice. You will echo what I'm saying. Those are the like 2 of the many responsibilities of a strong champion. And if you don't have access to budget or can steal budget from another department, I'm sorry, but you can't be my champion.
Yes, exactly. So like influence, it's usually written in somebody who has influence and can influence, or access to budget is actually also quite powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. So, yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. One question you mentioned was, what are the 3 things that you feel or have the most impact, or the 3 goals you said?
What are the top 3 things that look like success for this meeting? Notice how
I like that.
For this meeting.
For this meeting. Okay.
For this meeting, right? Not what looks like success when you buy my product. You're not even close to there yet.
Yes. Yeah. Like the question. Any other questions we definitely have to ask? So another one was the how do you buy this? That's a very good one compared to the older question, who is the decision? I mean, the worst question is, who is the decision maker?
Well, so let's that for a minute, because I think that's important to note. We live in a world, a society, where access to information is very, very easy to find. If you sell, we just talked about this on the webinar that we were on just moments ago. If you sell a product to HR, you look like a fool going to the CEO and saying, who's the best person to talk to? You should be going to LinkedIn, looking at the company, and finding the people that work in HR and talking to them directly. If you go to the CEO, what you're trying to do there is start high and stay high, because you don't want to go through the HR from the bottom up. You want to go from the CEO to the leader of HR. The problem is that CEO is so busy and has a billion things on their mind. And what they hear when they see that message, what they feel, even at a subconscious level, is, this isn't my problem. I don't have time for this. I can't refer you to the right person. I don't care about you. But we think, as the seller, because we're egotistical individuals as human beings, we think this is important. So I should go directly to the CEO.
Yes, yes, yes. That was one of the best advice I got as well. There is a too high up in the organization for your product. Your product, the CEO doesn't, it's very likely that the CEO doesn't care at all. I have to share this one with you though. I got a very good, I actually posted that on LinkedIn just a few days ago. I got a good trick from, I think it was the CEO of Sendoso. I'm not sure if you know Sendoso.
I do. Of ours.
They are cool. So he said he brought up a very good trick. So same as you go on LinkedIn, you look who is the head of HR or whoever you need to talk to, and then you send an email to the CEO and saying, hey, dear CEO, I have this, we solved this problem for HR departments. I would like to talk to blah 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 blah. Unfortunately, I didn't find his direct number. Can you forward it to him?
So I like that. I like that, but my question is, what is the success rate of actually getting a phone number back from that CEO that leads you to speak to that person? I'd like to know that number. And here's why I say that.
Good point.
Here's why I say that is because if I have someone that works for me in HR, and then I have somebody reaching out to me that's just clearly a salesperson, asking me, is this the right person and do you have their contact information? My go-to is to go to the HR person and say, do you know this person? And every time they're going to say no. Every time.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to contact
them, no, that CEO is going to delete that email and ignore the shit out of you.
Yeah, for sure. That's for sure. No, just saying, hey, I know who I need to talk to. It's that person. I don't have his contact details. Therefore, can you forward the email to him?
So
maybe there's a higher chance than
that. I'll give you one that I think is a better streamlined approach for this. Leave the CEO out of it. Even though if you feel like that CEO is approachable and responsive because you looked at their profile and they have that kind of vibe to them, you probably will have great success doing this. But if that CEO is like looking at their profile picture like this, right, and I'm making like an ugly face there, like an angry face there, right? They're not going to give you that phone number. No way, right? So here's a better one. Instead, use whatever data you might have, whatever data provider you might have to get a phone number. Any phone number will do. It doesn't matter for this exercise, for this tactic. But you can go directly to LinkedIn on your connection request, and you can say, this is the phone number I have for you that I'm trying to dial, but it is wrong. What is the best number to reach you at? And then you sign your name and you put your cell phone number underneath your name, cell-your phone number. Not only have you just become an approachable, reachable human being, but you've also given them the opportunity to say, I don't know where you got that number. Here's my number. This is extremely successful. And the reason is because people feel they feel compelled to correct us when we are wrong. They also feel compelled to correct bad data. We live in that world where they're like, oh, that's inaccurate. Here, this is right. So you can capitalize on that very human dopamine hit simply by saying, this is the number I have for you. I'm not saying you should go make up a 555 movie number. That's not going to work for you. But if you go in and you say, this is the company number I have and I'm trying to reach you and I use the directory and I can't get to you, what's your direct number? If I can't reach you, neither can any of their prospects or the people that want to reach them.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can engage them on this level, and people tend to be very responsive.
Love it. What is the way that works for you best right now at the moment with outreach when it comes to, outreach? Is it sequencing, campaigning? Is it LinkedIn alone?
100% omnipresence. Yep. I get the highest reply rates when it's impossible to ignore me. So let me break it down. Let me give you a good example. If you're on my radar and I'm prospecting you, the first step you're going to get from me is I'm going to call the number that I have. If it's your number and I get your voice message, I'm going to leave a voicemail, but I'm going to put my contact information on the back of that voice message, not on the front. That means for all of you out there that leave voice messages, when you say, hi, this is James with JB Sales, and the reason I'm calling is they immediately hit the number 9 and delete it and move on to the next one because they don't know James or JB Sales. So it's put that stuff on the back of your message. Right after I put that voicemail, I'm going to send an email, and that email starts with, I just left you a message, right? Then I'm going to send that email, and my attention grabber in the email, right? I'm reaching out because, and I have a reason for reaching out. Then I immediately go to LinkedIn, connection request, blank connection request. Sometimes I'll put it there in the connection request, you know, left a voicemail, sent you an email, want to close the loop here and add you to my professional network as well, James, and then sell dash my phone number. Just like that, I became a human being instead of a robot. And that person has a choice as to which channel they'd like to engage with you on. Big shock, it's usually not going to be a callback. But what you're going to get is you're going to get emails and DMs back that say, got your message. Thanks for leaving a message. I'm not able to talk about this now. Reach out to me at this time. Then you can say things like, what's going to be different at that time? And the conversation has begun.
Yeah. How about you said DMs?
Yeah.
What about messages like WhatsApp and stuff like that? That's something that I've heard.
WhatsApp is huge. Yeah.
Really?
If you sell internationally, WhatsApp is big. Because
WhatsApp is big.
If you sell only if you sell internationally in the U.S., if you're U.S. based, nobody in the U.S. is like connecting with other U.S. based people using WhatsApp. That's not happening. Right? It seems like that's not what it was meant for. I don't think that matters. WhatsApp is WhatsApp. Like, you can talk to anybody anywhere. But for some reason, like, U.S.-based people don't talk to people on WhatsApp that are also in the U.S. We text each other, we email each other, we hit you in Instagram, right? But we don't use WhatsApp for that. But internationally, WhatsApp is very widely accepted as a dominant form of communication. You can close deals on WhatsApp. You can make phone calls, leave voice messages on WhatsApp. These are all outside the box for people everywhere, because they don't typically get outreach like this. So things like WhatsApp and TikTok and even Snapchat, I'm seeing an increase in cold FaceTiming, which I highly recommend you don't do, right? But yeah, do not do this. Like, this is not,
why not? Why not, James? Something that you say should.
Dude, it's invasive. It's very invasive, right? Like, you want me to pick up my phone and hold it up so you can see my face, my home, my background. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know you. I'm not attached to you in any way. And what are you going to do? Are you going to pitch me right here, right now on FaceTime? I'm all set. Right? Like, that. Maybe one day that has a future. The right now says no way.
Yeah, that's why, by the way, the same reason why. I mean, WhatsApp in Europe, you know, is your messaging. So it took over. We don't message anymore. We don't do that. And it's all done privately, though. So, and you can't, I feel you shouldn't be doing that in Europe, send somebody a WhatsApp as a salesperson, because it's, as you said, with the FaceTime, this is felt intrusive for many, many people in Europe. Because
if you do it right, you can use WhatsApp. But here's how that goes. While I'm on the call with you, Patrick, right now, hey, Patrick, how do you like to be spoke to? How do you like it when people reach out to you? Where do you like that to be? Some people are like, you can text me. Here's my cell. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to text them all the time.
Yeah.
Some people are like, just shoot me an email. I like email. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Some people are like, are you on WhatsApp? Now you've earned the right to communicate with them on WhatsApp anytime you want. But until you get to that part in the conversation, don't think for one second you're going to engage a cold prospect on WhatsApp and they're going to be amped to accept you, talk to you, reach back out to you. That's probably unlikely, even in Europe.
Definitely. So what's the next big thing? I mean, we in Europe, we only hear about stuff 2 or 3 years later that you guys have been doing already for several years, obviously.
Yeah.
So what's the next thing?
So I think the next thing is full cycle sales reps that invest in themselves. That's what I think. I think that sales managers and leaders are going to be looking for people that are self-starters, that want to grow and develop new skills as they grow with the company. I think we're going to see an increase in the average tenure of a sales rep, because hiring will become much more scrupulous. It will be far more in-depth. I see a big shift right now in where people want to go from their starting position. So usually the traditional model will have people coming in as a sales development rep or a BDR, right? Business development rep. And then they become an account executive. And maybe they're there for a year and then they become customer success. And then they become a manager and then they become a VP. And that's the traditional growth pattern that we see. But I see this going in a completely different direction in the very near future. I see SDRs getting mastery of the role and then deciding what they want to do with it. Where would you like to go? Oh, I'd really like to join the marketing team. Okay, great. How are you going to continue to provide value if you move to the marketing team. Oh, you know what I'd really like to do is I'd like to start a podcast. Okay, great. What does that look like for feeding the top of the funnel for us, right? Continuing on that sales path. I'd like to learn how to close deals. Wonderful. Account executive might be great for you. I'd like to learn how to onboard people. Maybe customer success is the right move. But I think SDR is a doorway to multiple paths of growth at every company. And that shift is long coming, long overdue, because SDR used to only be siloed into one path, sales. Yes. Now it's become, how are you an anchor for everything sales related at our company as an SDR? So that shift, I think, is coming very quickly. Yeah. And for what it's worth to you out there, if you did want to invest in yourself, please join us, join jbsales.com. That's definitely a good move for you as a seller. Yeah.
So last question, James, SDRs, do you see that also as a for life career?
Yes, you know, I see a lot of people that know, for example, myself, I default to SDR. I think I am that role, no matter how many hats I'm wearing. I can take all those hats off and prospect anytime I want because it's what gets me excited. It's what I feel passionate about. It's what makes me happy. So because it does, I default there all the time. I am a career SDR, though I happen to also wear other hats, account executive, account manager, memberships, partnerships, yeah, content, media, marketing. I wear lots of hats, but I also default to this other thing, getting new business. And if you are that person, don't look at SDR as something that you have to leave behind anyway, because no matter what you're doing, you will always be prospecting somehow, some way. I see SDR as becoming a career for lots of young sellers that want to start there, stay there, and continue to accumulate knowledge and skills.
Love it. Love it. That's how, that's why I built a career path actually for SDRs, so that you contribute, you can contribute more and more, but also earn more and more up to wherever it brings you.
No limit. There's no limit to the amount of quote unquote money, right? Because that's usually the driving factor. And I think it's funny, right? We talk about this all the time. If you look at the SDR pattern, what you see is young sellers usually coming in and they're very hungry. The problem with that is that 6 months later, you're like, when they first start, they're so excited. They're like, oh my God, this is the best job ever. I can't believe this. I'm never going to quit this. I can't believe I get paid for it. 6 months later, you're like, how do you like it? And they're like, if I'm not an account executive in 6 weeks, I'm going to quit.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're like, what?
So true. Yes. So let's hope this is going to take, I see that change again as well. And I'd love to see it too. It's going to make everything a lot better. James, that has been a great pleasure to have you here. Lots of amazing tactical tips that we can use right tomorrow to make the sales experience better for our buyers. So thanks for joining and your knowledge.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Ha